Gabby Pride from the National Security State, bitch! I'm gay for the CIA! Lockheed, DynCorp, Raytheon, women are running the military-industrial complex now, the future is female, bitch! Murder is not a straight white male space anymore! I made this thermos out of a butt plug! I love my country and I love cock! Have some pride and drop those bombs, bitch!
Woo!
Even the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay were like, we love you, bitch! I would burn them with lit cigarettes and they would say, you go, girl! I was on Grindr in Bonabad, Pakistan, luring terrorists into a cave and then fucking them Christian! I fucked ISIS Christian! War is for everybody. War is forever. Like love. But you fucking look at that fucking death machine up in the sky and you say, you know who's in there? Probably some queer who's fucking proud.
Bennett, we're going to go ahead and need to censor that.
Oh, really?
No, it's fine.
So I put that in as the start for a reason, and that's because the apocalypse is on us. And you know why?
Why?
Something's going to happen tonight while we're recording, because gay bars near the Pentagon are seeing a massive surge in traffic tonight.
Why is that an indicator?
Nobody knows what that means, but everyone's looking at pizza and gay bars. So check it out right here. Freddy's Beach Bar.
Oh, my. Busier than usual.
Yeah, much busier. Way more than their highest day, like Fridays or earlier in the day. 6 o'clock. So, yeah, Tuesday. And then gay bars in the Pentagon are reporting a sharp drop in foot traffic tonight. Something big is happening. And correction, gay bars in the Pentagon are seeing a huge surge in traffic.
Okay, wait. Okay, so
we don't know what it means, but it could either be disastrous, could be Tim Dillon, or it could be...
Need to get one good bang in before the end of the world.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. Well, welcome to Human Reaction. I'm Kyle Mack. Oh, that's what it says in the notes, so I just figured it out.
Yeah, you just read it out?
Yeah, I did. And I got this first.
Anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
You got to update the notes for me, David. I'm out of practice.
Sorry,
I haven't
buddy.
Been in here a bunch. Just kidding. I'm Joe Sheehan. This is David Rand. Bennett on the buttons from afar.
Somewhere.
Remotely. Ex post facto.
We miss you, BB.
We do. Wait, we can't call him BB.
Oh, sorry.
That's not going to work. There's already a BB in this world, and I don't think Bennett would like to be associated with
it. That's fair. That's fair. We do not miss that.
Especially BB. In the context of the moment we're living in, which is what we're going to be talking about tonight. David, why don't you line it up for us?
Yeah, so, this meme pretty much summarizes it. You got George Bush, Iraq has WMDs, Iran, of course, Trump, Iran has WMDs, and then Back to the Future.
Hey, I've seen this one. Yeah, that is sure what it feels like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. And this isn't going to be a total duplication of last Friday's. Obviously, over the weekend, things developed. Honestly, there's so much going on and the news is coming so fast at us. I want to focus mostly on the rhetoric around it because it is that moment, right? Like that sense and that meme is exactly how I feel. Like, I'm in 2002, I'm a sophomore in high school, but this time, I know things.
Yes.
You know, and then I didn't.
Yes.
So, I was just lapping it up. I was being told to be afraid, so I was afraid. I was being told I was under threat, so I felt under threat.
Totally. Well, and I mean, the difference here, I think, as well, is that there hasn't been an attack on the U.S. homeland to sort of prepare that. Mm-hmm. I mean, in this case, with Israel kind of making the first strike on Iran, it totally feels flipped, but they're trying to use the same bag of tricks and not acknowledging the fact that we have 2 decades worth of experience dealing with their bullshit. And I think a lot of people are seeing through it. At least that is my perception of the situation.
I think that's right. I think that's how we are thinking about it. We're weirdos, but like regular people, how they're oriented to it. There's a poll came out today from, I think, The Economist, suggesting that it was about 68% of the American public opposes military intervention with Iran.
Good. That's great.
Which is really encouraging.
Yeah.
It's funny. People point to Truth Social at like the posts on Trump's, like replies on Trump's posts. It's not as encouraging as you'd hope. Right. I mean, like,
meaning there's a lot of Republicans who are for it.
Yeah. Defending it. I mean, using the sort of boomer, no offense, boomers, Fox News. I watch cable television. That's where I get my sole source of news or information about the world. And I assume it's not there to lie to me. And I want to know, today I had an interesting moment where I think I discovered some Fox News reporting that is straight up propaganda. And I got the, you know, I looked it up and I did some research, and I'm fairly confident in my case. And I want to present that at the end of the podcast about some of the stuff about this new nuclear facility called the Rainbow Facility that the Fox News reported on is factually a, you know, we now have intelligence that suggests that this is where the secret tritium reactor is.
I just want to point out that I think it's very progressive of Iran to have a facility called the Rainbow Facility, particularly in June.
Dude, war is so gay.
War is so fucking gay now.
Speaking of gay and war, we have
Lindsey Graham.
No, sorry. For, I was going to start with Hannity. But
that works too.
They're kind of gay for each other.
Ask yourself, as an American, ask yourself a simple question. How many missiles would it take from a foreign country and their proxies that would be fired into the USA, into our country, killing American citizens, terrorizing American citizens, before you would want that country stopped? Would it be one missile? What's your threshold? 2 missiles? 100 missiles? 1,000? 10,000? You know, what would you expect American leaders to do if this country, the number one state sponsor of terror, was, according to reports, a month to 6 months away from arming themselves with a nuclear weapon, as they have been firing these tens of thousands of missiles throughout the years?
Yeah, so that's the war propaganda, and that feels so 2002.
Yeah.
Right? It feels like Hannity getting on and telling me and my dad, as we're sitting around the after dinner, that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein were like best buddies, you know, and just giving us that shit as if that was at all connected to reality. If you know anything about the history of the Middle East, those two actors, literally anything, right? And that war propaganda moment is so on us right now. And I think if you kind of listen to Kyle, he's kind of like, yes, that's happening. But there's like, you know, the kind of pro-peace side, the non-interventionist side is kind of overreacting. And we should be more, you know, we should be more chill about this. And I think that there's reasonableness there. But also, this is happening for a reason. Like, things are really going down, and this could easily spiral into a very dangerous direction.
For sure. Can you just clarify for me, since I've been out of town and wasn't here for that episode, what is sort of the high-level view of Kyle's case there, why we should be more chill about this?
Yeah, just that I think he sees the realpolitik of trying to strong-arm Iran into a deal. I think the difference in agreement, our disagreement is that I don't think there's a deal that can be had given the terms that the Trump administration is counting on other than regime change. And that's not a deal.
Yeah.
That's a regime change operation.
Right.
And when I see them advocating for regime change repeatedly, which we will be reviewing, I start to think, well, maybe that's really what's going on here. Sure. Maybe there was no deal from the very beginning. Maybe the whole point was regime change operation. And this is the right time. This is the right set of dominoes have been set up that there's a pathway to that.
Sure.
And we'll dig into that in a minute. But to go on to Hannity stuff there for a minute, when he says, well, how would you respond if missiles were being fired at your country, right? But where did the missiles come from? Who fired the first missiles? Who did the first strike here?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how far back you want to go. But in the context of this exact conflict, it was Israel that fired the first missiles.
Yeah, in the direct conflict between these two nations.
Right.
Right. If you think that arming a proxy group through funds and resources and maybe weapons is casus belli for going to war with that country in a regime change operation, then Russia has a casus belli against us. That means they have a just war claim against us, against our government.
With Japan as well?
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know. We drop bombs on them.
Oh.
Well, they certainly attacked us a bit as well. Pearl Harbor would have been
a major dialogue here. And that's been, you know, that's been something that people have been riffing on. They've been saying, well, you know, we do regime change. I mean, that's the thing that really freaks me out is I'm seeing these guys say, well, we do regime change operations all the time. They say, well, what about Iraq and Syria and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, yeah, but what about Germany and Japan? Well, what about Germany and Japan? What happened to Germany and Japan? You got to Dresden those people. You got to drop nuclear weapons on them to do that. Are you prepared to do that?
Yeah.
Does Iran deserve that for saying naughty things like death to America, like saber rattling like that? You know, like that's the question is it the right thing to do? Does it serve our interests? And is it an act that is going to so degrade our moral character, so divide us again against each other in the way that we were divided in after the war in Iraq, in the way that the entire priorities of the Bush regime and addressing Social Security problems back then, addressing Medicaid and Medicare. He did address it by creating new Medicaid program or Medicare programs, but all of that domestic agenda just disappeared. Is it worth the trade-off for all the things that Trump is trying to do? He's backtracking on deportations right now, saying we're going to make a special rule for farmers and hospitalities.
Right.
And we saw that.
Yeah, I did.
Right. So what is happening there? What is going on? And that might be reality setting in for Trump that he can't win the farmland while doing this.
Yeah.
But it also is, this is a thing that happens, right? And this happened in the Bush era. We could see it again. And all those things that you want, deregulation, cutting spending, you know, we'll probably get tax cuts. Bush was able to do a tax cut and a war at the same time, but increase defense spending in order to take up another, you know, long war, because that's what regime changes are. They don't happen quick and easy, not historically.
Yeah, no, they don't. I mean, if our history is in the Middle East is any indication, if we get involved in this directly, it will be 2 decades.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's just like the last thing that I thought we would see right now, given what Trump said on the campaign trail.
Well, right. And that's one of the interesting parts of the dialogue that's happening right now is if you look at Trump's statements over his time, you know, he has been an Iran hawk in many ways, right? He's the one who got us out of the JCPOA, Obama-Iran deal. Why? I still don't understand. Like, there's never been an explanation that makes any sense to me. The best one is he didn't like that. This is the one that Kyle gave, which is that he didn't like France doing the nuclear enrichment. But that's like, that is an insufficient reason given the threat profile of a nuclear armed Iran, right? And all, right. Or going to war with Iran over a request for the their nukes. They were still allowed to enrich, but that was a program which they would send them their remaining highly enriched fuel so they can kind of water it down into enriched fuel that they can then use for their reactors. Now, his standard for the program, right, is, and this is, the you know, basically where we wound up with this, is just to remind everybody, is the Iranian, in this dialogue with Trump, basically said this is what they'd be willing to accept, which is pretty much the JCPOA with some bells and whistles on it. So limiting enrichment to, it's somewhere between 3-point-something and 4-point-something percent, which is well below weapons enrichment. Export or dilute the existing uranium that they have enriched to 60%. They've only done that 60% since Trump dropped out of the JCPOA. So he has to own the fact that they have all the 60% of enriched uranium.
Is he doing that?
Of course not.
Right.
You know, and that's one of the things, too, about people regretting their Trump endorsements and things like that. It's like, it's understandable because Kamala was so terrible, and we'd probably be in this exact same spot if Kamala was here.
I'm sure we would have been here quicker.
Yeah, or whatever. I don't know. But if that were true, but at the same time, you know, Biden failed to get back in the JCPOA. And, you know, this whole issue is just kind of boiling all there because of that. And I understand why people are on that, but you can also understand that the Biden administration didn't help with any of this either, right? Inspections. So this would re-implement the enhanced inspections from the Obama administration. Basically, one of the requests was not to have an intercontinental ballistic missile system, but the Trump administration insists on, you know, other things, like even more direct, like can't even have regional missile systems, which is just absurd. Mm-hmm. And then limiting support to regional militias in Yemen and Syria, but not Hezbollah. That's the only one that they said that we're not going to give up on Hezbollah. And weaponization freeze. It's just basically them reaffirming the fatwa that has existed since 2006 in Iran against the development of nuclear weapons.
What is a fatwa?
A fatwa is like a religious order, right? Sure. Like this is our religious decision.
Gotcha.
And then in favor for that, all they would do is a phased in implementation of a removal of the sanction regime. Now, this could all be like not a serious proposal, but it wasn't a proposal the Trump administration accepted and said, hey, that's good enough. what happened was they started the negotiation under no nuclear weapons, and then somewhere in the negotiation, you know, Witkoff and Trump started saying no enrichment. So that means point number one, 5% of the left saying you can't do it at all. And what that does is that takes away their ability to make any amount of enriched uranium. They have to import it from overseas, even though they have uranium in Iran. Remembering that in the 1950s, we gave them the technology to enrich uranium in the Atoms for Peace program in the first place. It's the only reason we're here, too, is that we're always overseas doing shit and it comes back to bite us in the ass.
Yes. And I mean, to just remind the audience, I mean, that's for energy, right? That's for civilian purposes, for powering their country.
Yeah. And the reason, because there are two reasons for it. One is you power your country with nuclear power so that then you can sell your oil on the international market and make money.
Sure.
Right? You're a weed dealer who doesn't smoke his own weed.
Right.
Right.
You can't sell your oil if you're using it for energy for your own country.
Exactly. Right. Right. And obviously, abundance of energy is where a lot of prosperity comes from. So, like, they want abundant energy. And they do have other resources. They could do hydro. They could do other stuff, too. But, you know, this is where they put their eggs. Also, because it gives them the ability to, if Israel or the United States or Saudi Arabia or Turkey or any other actor that has resources in the area decide to turn on them, the only guarantor of your national sovereignty is your ability to access a nuclear weapon. We've decided that. That's U.S. foreign policy.
Yeah.
Like, we decided that. When Libya happened, it was decided now.
Yeah.
And that's the rule. It was already the rule. That's why North Korea has a nuke. That's why Pakistan has a nuke. And we're not that worried about their nukes. Yeah, but we are really worried about Iran getting
nuked. And I just have to ask, because that double standard is so evident, why?
Well, the only country that is not in that list, that isn't in the non-proliferation treaty, that wasn't part of the Atoms for Peace program and got them from a Western country, that wasn't in a scenario where they got nukes for other reasons, like Pakistan's reason, which is a crazy tale, is Israel. And they have like 200 nuclear warheads, probably. We don't know. They still deny that they have nukes. So, you know, like, we have that double standard because we've decided that they're on our side. Their nukes count as our nukes. I don't know how to, treat them like a foreign country.
Right. Like, well, I guess my question is more so, why are we so concerned with Iran and not as concerned, say, with North Korea or Pakistan or whatever?
Excellent question.
Is it just that the Project for a New American Century and the Clean Break Memo just said, this is going to be our plan, we're going to overthrow these seven countries, and this is just the last one to go, and they've just been waiting to get it done, and now's their moment?
That could be the real subversive reason. I mean, the other one is that, you know, at the end of the day, the hegemon wants what the hegemon wants, right? I mean, imagine the global security state as an all-seeing, all-powerful creature, like a leviathan creature that's just got its tentacles all over the world, 900 bases in 173 countries all over the world, right? The largest military budget, larger than the next 20 countries combined, a massive naval fleet, space force, air force, nuclear program that is, you know, larger than most countries' defense budget is our nuclear program, and it's in the Department of Energy. It doesn't even count in the Department of Defense budget.
Is that right?
Yes. We've been over $1 trillion, if you include the nuclear budget, for a long time.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, just thinking through that and what that thing, that is like a culture, a clique. It's a bottom-up group dynamic that makes it the people who are in it.
Not to mention a tremendous source of wealth for the companies that buy or that manufacture those weapons, sell them to the government.
So when you look at oil exports, when you look at these international markets, and you look at, you know, the dynamic of the maintenance of that hegemony is the most important thing, even at the cost of nuclear war, right up to the brink. That's where we've been with Russia. After Operation Spiderweb, only 2 weeks ago, we gave the intel for the Ukrainians to sneak drones into Russia to go bomb their nuclear bomber fleet. Right? We were this close to a nuclear response right then. That's not the first time that's happened in the Ukrainian war.
Yeah.
And that is all happening because the hegemony, what the hegemony wants, it has to go get. It's death addicted cold. To this, you know, being on top, right? So that the fact that Iran won't bow to that is its number one problem. The Abrahamic Accords are the opposite of that. It's peace through buying off all the countries so that they don't care about Palestine anymore. Well, Iran is saying, no, I still care about Palestine. You can't buy me off.
Yeah.
You know, and like that dynamic is what makes them mortal enemies. That's why it's a regime change war at the end of the day, in a sense, too. Right. Because if you can't convince Iran to to get rid of their enrichment, because they need a latent nuclear capability to have that final backstop of the Americans are coming. Can we hold them off long enough to develop a nuke so that we have the chance of actually maintaining our
sovereignty.
Government?
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong. Iran is just another criminal cartel called the government that happens to be in Iran, right? Sure. Just like ours just happens to be the biggest and worst and most terrible. Theirs is also awful and terrible, just not as bad as ours, because they didn't kill a million people in Iraq in the 2000s. They didn't kill 500,000 in the 1990s. You know, so like that's our government's responsibility. That's what they did.
Yeah.
So I'm like looking at it in terms of, I don't see how they could get what they want without overthrowing the regime. Right, because they have been so including like this, they have in theirs that they want to that they're going to limit the no direct expansion of long range missile programs, and what that means is long range would mean their ability to get to Great Britain and Southern Africa, Asia, and then intercontinental over to America. They can't get that far. They can't get that far now. So when these people say you're under direct threat, this is when Bibi said this week, oh, first it's Tel Aviv, next it's New York. That's not a thing. That's not a reality thing. That's like completely disconnected from anything that's happening in the world.
That's just fear-mongering propaganda.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with reality. And the fact the reporter doesn't push back, like, do they have that capability?
Right.
Doesn't even ask the question. Doesn't say they can't do that. Just ask the question. Can they do that?
Well, I mean, here's a question, right? I mean, so correct me if I'm wrong, because I've very fortunately been out of the news cycle quite a bit while this has been going on. Sorry. And I'm grateful for that. But Russia and Iran have been friendly for a long time. Is that right?
Yeah.
And Russia, I mean, so the missiles that I've been seeing. Well,
yes and no. Right. So Russia actually had colonial holdings in Iran for decades.
But right? they're both in BRICS, which is an economic block, but they're
since
allies.
The Iranian Revolution happened during they've been but so the division happened after the Iranian Revolution 1979 when they rejected America, kicked out the Shah, kicked out BP oil, and started their own country, and then we went to war with them with Iraq. Who was on the opposite side of that in the Cold War? It was Russia. So they've been friends since then.
Gotcha. Okay, yep. Perfect. So I would imagine, and I don't know if this is true, you can fill me in, that Russia is supporting Iran in some way with regard to their defense systems. I mean, the missiles that I'm seeing fall on Israel look a lot like the hypersonic missiles that we saw piled into Ukraine.
Yeah.
Are those the same ones? Are they Russian weapons?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. We know that Russian missile cells have been happening. Yeah,
and so, this is really...
There is some suspicion, too, that they have their own hypersonics now.
That Iran has developed their own hypersonics with probably Russian technology or scientific, you know... technology and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's called the Fatah system, I believe what it was. I was looking it up before.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, really, this represents another front in the war with Russia, really, if you want to back it up one step.
There's a sense in which that's true. And there's a sense, and there's some people who are doing, Trump is a grand master strategist, and this is actually get Russia to capitulate in Ukraine. Yeah, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
This feels exactly like George Bush again. Axis of evil.
Right.
Just slightly different characters.
Right. It's the number one state sponsor of terror now instead of Axis of Evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. And then obviously the neocons have been saying that for a while. And Lindsey Graham says it here. Let's dive into that real quick. And we can get into that claim.
Chapter on the largest state sponsor of terrorism in modern history. We got a chance to end a threat to the state of Israel forever by replacing this regime with something better. And I do believe the biggest winner of the Ayatollah leaving would be the Iranian people. So pray for our troops in harm's way. There are risks associated with any operation. They join the military to keep their country safe and to make the world a better place. And taking on the Ayatollah does both. To our friends in Israel, we have your back. We're praying for success. You've tolerated too much too long into the world. You have normalized trying to kill the Jews. When Israel's attacked, nobody says a word about it. If France were attacked, what would the French do? What would we do? So the days of the expecting Israel to sit on the sidelines and not go to the heart of the beast are over. Take this regime down. Make the world a better place.
Well, they take the...
Yeah. So notice, take the regime down. This is a regime change operation from his point of view.
Multiple times.
Yeah, so he's pushing for regime change. The subverted underlying is that either Trump knowingly or unknowingly put in deal requirements that require regime change. Lindsey Graham's pushing for it. Mark Levin's pushing for it. All the neocons are pushing for it. So what's going on there? notice that he doesn't articulate a single time an American interest.
Right.
This is all American servicemen being at risk for another foreign, for a foreign country.
Right. He highlights two buckets for quote unquote reasons that people join the military. It's to keep America safe and to make the world a better place, which is like the most vague possible rationale of all time. And true for all of them.
I've never talked to a veteran, and I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of veterans. When I was so cool. When I got to work with Concerned Veterans for America, I got to do all these like, you know, meetings and events and stuff like that with veterans. And I never had one ever. I love to talk to them, but why did you join up? And every one of them said the same thing. To protect my country, protect my family, free college tuition.
Yeah.
You know, and a job afterwards.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? And
no one was like,
no one said to make a world a better place.
They,
what is that?
They need freedom.
That's the Peace Corps.
In the Middle East.
You know, yeah. It wasn't for Israel, for God's sakes. And I'm not saying Israel isn't the people of Israel. I'm just talking about to protect the Bibi regime, the cartel government that runs that geographic area called Israel.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Right. I mean, Israelis are right now, you know, like right before this whole war started, and maybe one of the reasons why the Iran war has been added on top now and not some other time is because Bibi has corruption charges looming over him, sort of Damocles.
Yeah.
There were major protests, tens of thousands of people in the streets of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and all over all the major cities of Israel right before all this happened.
Right before October 7th, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, what, you know, what's that? I mean, how come we're not talking more about that?
Right.
You know, why now, Bibi? Well, now, well, I mean, Hannity said, you know, 1 to 6 months. The only estimate I can find from an actual, like, qualified person in nuclear science is, and this is not knowing everything too, is 1 year to 3 years to take 60% uranium grade, upgrade it to enough to where you could do the kind of damage that they want to do with it. You also have to like develop. You can't just like take uranium, throw it into a missile and shoot it. That's not how it works.
Right.
There's a lot of steps to create the nuclear explosion in the way that you want it to. As I understand it, I am not a nuclear scientist.
Do your own research.
It took us, you know, quite a bit of time and a lot of resources to do so. It would take them that time too. So 1 to 3 years is probably more realistic. Two, our current threat assessment does not indicate that they've made that decision. The Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, said in the Senate under oath that the current understanding is that. She then later, when she got into the DNI, put out a statement that said, here's our threat assessments, all the threat assessments in the world. And in the section on Iran, it says they have not made the political decision to do so, although they have built up all this nuclear material and they are trying to project their force around their region. Every country in the world is trying to project their force around the region, unless you're a U.S. client state. So that's just a proxy way of saying they're not a U.S. client state.
Right.
You know, like that's all that is to me. You know, so like there is no case there that I can find, and I want to find it. I want to contend with something real. I want it not to be all a shadow theater of lies, but that's what it looks like, guys. And I am doing my utmost as an amateur podcaster to get on top of this issue and understand exactly what the contingency is. Because when I was a kid, I got swept up in this. And I will not let other kids do that if there can be an alternative.
Yeah.
And there's lots of alternatives that are better than us even. But I'm, to contribute what I can to that is really important to me. And I can't see it.
Yeah.
You know, I see no case for an immediate nuclear threat. So why now?
Right.
Right. And one of the reasons why now. Now get this. This goes back to the Glenn Beck memo thing. I want to talk about it now because I'm feeling spicy about it.
Good.
All right. So Glenn Beck memo is you know, written for Israel, for the BB, you know, minority government at the time. It gets to Washington, D.C. According to General Wesley Clark, it's been running around Washington, D.C. circles since like 1995. And other kinds of like this sort of strategies.
And just to be clear, since we did address it earlier, but just reiterate what the Clean Break Memo is.
Basically, it's in short, written by people who are interested in changing the dynamic of the clean break from the peace process with the Palestinians and Israel. How to change that dynamic so you're no longer giving up land, you're no longer trying to trade land for peace. How to do that? Well, they said, what if we overthrow a bunch of countries in the Middle East and Africa that are supporting the Palestinians and replace them with other governments? Then we don't have to give the Palestinians anything.
And then so the ultimate outcome of that is the Palestinians basically just get run over.
Yeah, right. out of those five countries, four of them have been overthrown. Right?
Four of the five.
And four of the five.
And the last one is?
Iran.
Yeah.
So with the remaining Iran, one of the ones that were the last ones to fall that just fell this December, was it December or October of last year? Syria.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we covered
Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that war's boiling for a decade. And then all of a sudden, Turkey, along with, you know, covert operations, probably with USAID funding and, you know, CIA and Pentagon funding. We know this. This has been reported. This is not speculation. This is, you know, mainstream news coverage has covered this. Invested in rebel groups that then swept into the capital, overthrew them, and installed a guy who is a former Al-Qaeda operative, an ISIS operative, who in his youth used to chop off heads, but now he's a reformed good guy. He wears a suit now.
He's grown up.
Trimmed his beard a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, he's looking handsome.
He's a respected world leader now.
Ready to be a world leader now. So what does that mean? Well, Syria, what's right between Iraq and Israel? The airspace of Syria. Who is not shooting at Israeli planes right now? Syria. They are not. That's interesting for a religious fanatic who's a former Al-Qaeda operative and an ISIS figure who supposedly is this radical Islamist who hates the Jews and Israel, but they're not. Why didn't ISIS ever attack Israel? Why not?
Hmm.
Huh.
Interesting.
What was that about?
What was that about?
They're not very far from them. They didn't pick up their weapons and their American tanks and go that way. I don't know.
Maybe it's because they were funneled shit tons of money to do something different.
Maybe Mossad had a role there. I don't know. But that country was overthrown. And we do know, too. I mean, if you look at it like, well, but what about all the popular support in Syria against the Assad regime? Well, that's true. But also, Diplomacy 2.0. We have that thread now. That thread has been established. Diplomacy 2.0 was a decision during the Iraq war, leading up to the Arab Spring. So we're talking Afghanistan and Iraq. Leading into the Arab Spring, where we decided, oh, we'll work with tech companies to manipulate social media so that we can generate on-the-ground organic movements.
Right.
They're now no longer organic once you've generated them with state dollars.
Right.
You know,
it's the soft power influence stuff that Mike Benz talks about.
Yes. That is the start of the censorship industrial complex, is Diplomacy 2.0 right there, right? Where we're using the Pentagon to manipulate people into overthrowing their governments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Using big tech and Pentagon relationship.
Right. Which is what we saw happen in Egypt at that time.
Yes. Egypt is a basic example, but yeah, there's other North African
countries
and
well.
Other countries. So
yeah.
Syria starts out as an Arab Spring, and then he supposedly gasses people, and then they sent out a reporter who sniffed a backpack and said, smells bad to me. And that was the evidence that we were supposed to use. Remember? We watched it on
check
out that episode.
The old backpack sniffer.
Yeah. So this is that, you know, that those kind of claims, those kind of like, there's a much of mythos there that once you have those threads of clean break and Diplomacy 2.0, and was the Arab Spring really real? Was it what it looked like? Because at the time thought, looks like a totally organic movement to me, but I didn't know about the intelligence apparatus quite the same. We didn't know about the Diplomacy 2.0. That was a revelation only in the last 2 years. So how do we understand this stuff? Well, now we can. So that cloud, that shadow theater that makes up the war propaganda is so much more pierceable, so much more able to cleave through it.
Yes.
So
the question to me is, will the clarity and the experience that we have now looking at the world through this new lens, where we can kind of see through this propaganda that they tried to use, that they successfully used during the Bush administration, will we be able to leverage this into actually affecting anything positively when it comes to ending this conflict before it becomes something much, much worse?
That's a question of whether or not Trump's base speaks out and whether or not they're willing to do the risky thing. You know, and people are. I mean, Dave Smith got on Breaking Points this week and said, you know, I said if I regret this and he starts a war with Iran, I will apologize. And he did. That's an act of bravery to me. His audience is partially made up of Trump supporters, I'm sure. He's going to lose money for that. But the reality is, in the long run, I would rather be on the side of asking the powerful to prove their case at minimum, at very minimum.
Yeah.
You know, if you're Charlie Kirk, and he's been relatively good on this issue as of today, but if you're Charlie Kirk and all of your audience is made of that, then you should be saying, at minimum, you should be saying, but make your case, President Trump.
Yes.
Like you should be, I trust you to make good decisions, but I need, so I can tell my audience with all the you know, authority that I've been, all the respect, all the clout that I've been given, if I'm going to be a man of integrity, I need to tell my audience, yeah, this is the evidence that he displayed to the American public, and argue for that, not just say, we'll trust him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the dynamics, let's say, between Trump and Tucker Carlson, where Tucker came out, made a very bold and plain statement in opposition to this war, hosted Steve Bannon on his show and talked all about it. And then Trump comes out and calls Tucker Carlson kooky.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're Charlie Kirk and you're seeing that happen to the largest broadcaster in the conservative media space, one of the largest broadcasters in the world, especially in the United States particularly, you're probably going, that's not maybe a line I want to toe.
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah. I mean, that's might be the Trump campaign's office's intended effect. You know, but also, Trump did the most like boomer thing ever, too. He said, what did he say? He said, yeah, Tucker Carlson, this was after the kooky thing, and he was like asked about it live by a press circuit. And he said, oh, he needs to get on a television network so he can have some real influence.
Oh, my God. No way.
You know, I don't think you know the numbers, bro.
This coming from the guy that ran the podcast circuit to win the election.
Yes.
Come on, buddy.
Yes, I don't think he gets it. So, yeah, I mean, we got this this whole debate about what is America First that came out of this Tucker Carlson versus Trump dynamic. And, you know, this is his truth tweet message. America First means many great things, including the fact that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Make America great again.
What does Iran having a nuclear weapon have to do with making America great?
Yeah, if you don't want to have a nuclear weapon, you should have signed the deal they gave you. The terms that they agreed to.
Yeah.
Didn't agree to, proposed.
Sure.
I mean, what if they would have, okay, so get this too. It, like, play the game logic out. If they would have said, here are our terms, and Trump would have said, okay, would they have said, no, actually, we want to have a nuclear weapon? And come on! Like, that wasn't a thing. That was never a thing.
No.
So, like, there's always the chance that the Iranian regime was playing a game, but you're still left with the question of, like, well, I don't know what happened in these meetings. And I can't trust you anymore, bro.
Yeah.
Because your own DNI said this. And then he went against his own DNI. First, Tulsi Gabbard was not invited to the Camp David meeting on Iran.
What?
This was a week ago.
That's
right?
Insane.
Before
to me.
The supposed deception campaign, right? So if Trump is, and this is why Dave Smith, you know, basically apologized. Trump pretty much said, we're not involved. In fact, first there was a media cycle where he said, "All right, Israel, don't do that. Oh, please don't do that." You know,
and no, stop, wait, come back.
You know, I kind of celebrated that. I was like, "Hey, good." Yeah. You know, he's telling Israel no, good. But then when it happened, he was like, "Look at how great it is, and how much everyone I was negotiating with—they're all dead now, including the lead guy for peace out of the negotiators. Right, the guy who was driving it, the lead negotiator, is dead now." He got his leg blown off, and he died several days later in the hospital, or a day later in the hospital. I had to fight with ChatGPT about whether or not that counted as being killed by a strike. It was weird.
Well, it's like dying of COVID or dying with COVID.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and then on one of the
that's not something circuits, to be laughed at. I'm sorry, I didn't really need to laugh.
No, it's okay. Yeah, kind of savage. He said this when asked about it. On Air Force One about Tulsi Gabbard's statements, right? Because, like, obviously she's made it clear via the National Threat Assessment that Iran has not made the political choice to make a weapon, and he was asked.
So she always said that you don't believe Iran should be able to have a nuclear weapon, but how close do you personally think that they were to getting one? Because Tulsi Gabbard testified in March that the intelligence community said Iran wasn't building a nuclear weapon.
I don't care what she said. I think they were very close to having it.
I don't care what she said.
Yeah, that's your DNI. That's the person you put in charge because you don't trust the deep state that lied to you about troop movements in Syria.
Yeah, so okay, so if he's not listening to her, then who the fuck is he listening to?
Great question. Marco Rubio? Did he start listening to Mark Levin now? I don't know. Is some Mark out there he's listening to?
Oh, terrible. Okay. First now means Iran can't have a nuke. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and then here's him telling him kooky, Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. Everyone agrees with you. Iran, their current policy since 2006, agrees with you. But they're going to have elite nuclear capability because no one trusts America. Because we said, hey, give up the nukes, Libya. And they said, okay. And then curvy sword.
Curvy sword.
What are they supposed to do?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying, and once again, not a fan of Iran.
But it's basic self-preservation instinct is what you're saying. I mean, it is something that they would absolutely want to have in their back pocket to ensure their continued survival. I mean, it's what anybody would do.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You know, and this is exactly the problem. I have the same problem with this that Trump had with Barack Obama in 2011. When he said, in order to get elected, Barack Obama will start a new war with Iran. That's the tweet. And it's not saying that I'm not saying that he's doing this to get reelected, because I think this is actually disastrous for his base.
Oh, 100%. It's going to
be disastrous for
the Republican
Party.
Well, it's disastrous for his legacy. And I mean, we've talked a little bit about, what's Trump going to do because he doesn't have to worry about getting reelected.
Yeah.
I was not picturing start every freaking war that you want for your Israeli donors or whoever, your Zionist donors.
Yeah.
That's what it seems like is happening here, is this is appeasement to the people who support these particular policy positions and gave him a shitload of money.
Right. You're speculating on the Adelsons giving him $100 million or $200 million or whatever. I've seen a bunch of different figures. And he's speculating about reelection. You know, like, these are the things that happen when you don't say the DNI is wrong and we have a new updated fact. Here she is to say, here's the new intelligence given to the American people to make a case for war.
Right.
Right. And that's the problem, is there is no case. There's no there.
Right.
And then, like, we got this weird media cycle, too. Nick Sordor reported on it. Tulsi Gabbard confirmed she and the president are on the same page when it comes to Iran's nuclear timeline. And then she does this quote that's like about people not reading it. But he posted down here what it says. And the DNI report says that they suspended their nuclear weapons program in 2003. The Supreme Leader Khomeini has not authorized a nuclear weapons program he suspended in 2003.
Well, hold on. It goes on to say, in the past year, we have seen an erosion of a decades-long taboo in Iran on discussing nuclear weapons in public, likely emboldening nuclear weapons advocates within Iran's decision-making apparatus.
Yes.
So,
of course, that's happening.
So they're seeing movement that direction, but that's like a very vague statement.
That's speech.
Yeah.
That's also bombing our country because they said death to America.
That's not necessarily action. We're seeing increased activity or whatever.
And of course they would, because every day Israeli-backed media is saying how the real enemy here is Iran.
Right.
For a year and a half.
Yeah.
So of course this is what they would do, right? If you have a latent nuclear capability, after you were guaranteed, you got all your guarantees for security removed after he pulled out the JCPOA for not having a nuclear program, of course you would then start to prepare to defend yourself against a country that is currently saying, well, the real cause of all of our troubles isn't Hamas, it's Iran. And if we're holding accountable to who funded Hamas, what about when Israel funded Hamas?
Which has been confirmed and reported on by Israeli newspapers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about that? Like, if that's all you need for that they're the enemy of the Israeli people.
Well, then the Israeli government is the enemy of the Israeli
that's
people.
That's what I'm saying. This is just the cartel that runs that area.
Yeah.
All right. So the best defense of the Trump administration I've seen so far is J.D. Vance's tweet. And I don't want to read the whole thing, but I want to read this important section here. Two sections, actually. So, second, I've seen a lot of confusion over the issue of, quote, civilian nuclear power, end quote, and uranium enrichment, end quote. These are distinct issues. Iran could have a civilian nuclear power without enrichment, but Iran rejected that. Meanwhile, they've enriched uranium far above the levels necessary for any civilian purpose. They've been found in violation of their non-proliferation obligations by the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, which is hardly a right-wing organization. we're going to talk about that.
Hold on. Before you go down, I just want to point out, I think what he's identifying here is that they could have a nuclear energy program if they chose to import the material instead of enrich it themselves.
Yes.
Which flies in the face of the point that you made, which is, if they're spending money on that, they're not spending it on something else. So it's sort of a zero sum in that sense, where it's inhibiting economic development for them potentially if they have to buy that material as opposed to develop it in country.
Also, Well, I mean, yes. No, that wouldn't be a... Well, yeah, there'll probably be savings for them. There's like an economic case there to develop their own uranium and their own resources.
So then maybe I'll just frame it as a question. Why wouldn't they just buy it?
Well, because they need a latent nuclear program, just like Japan, Brazil, and Germany do, in order to have that as a backup for their ultimate defense.
Okay, so the civilian nuclear program is sort of... I mean, it's necessary, but it's sort of a front... And for having a enrichment program to have that trump card effect.
At the end of the day, it's not really a trump card too, because you know, war nowadays happens in hours, not a year and a half.
Sure.
Right. So their ability to go from 3% up to 90%, yeah, they've mastered the fuel cycle. They mastered the fuel cycle in like 2003. Right. This is forever. Right. But they signed the non-proliferation agreement and they said, hey, we're doing this for civilian purposes. They've built up this 60% stockpile because they've been given every signal that America wants to overthrow them. They can read English.
Turns out.
So when John McCain's running around saying bomb, bomb, bomb Iran, they're saying, well, shit, the greatest power in the history of the world wants to overthrow our government.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the government good. I'm not on their side. But at the end of the day, that's how rational actors are going to behave when bellicosely advocate for their overthrow.
Yeah.
If they say 1 to 6 months. We've been saying that they have or are a year away or a week away from a nuclear weapon since the 1980s. So at some point they're like, okay, you're going to make us the devil. We'll just be the devil then. Right. If you're going to and there's other reasons why they're the devil too. You know, I'm sure they're terrible to their own citizens many ways.
But they're sort of living the role that they've been cast in by the West.
In many ways. Yeah. So I'm not saying that justifies it. I'm just saying that this is a scenario in which they're saying, well, we don't want to be a client state. We want to do our own thing. They're saying exactly what Trump said in Saudi Arabia, which is we have our traditions and we're not going to be told by you about what to do, what to be. And we think the Palestinian problem is a problem. And you know what? A lot of Americans and Israelis agree with that. So when you're dealing with it, if you're dealing with it in reality, you got to contend with that. You can't just pretend like, oh, a latent nuclear capability isn't one of their concerns. Because it is, yeah. J.D. Vance. It is. Yeah. It has to be for the same reason that it was a concern for Saddam.
Right? And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you had a nuke, we couldn't have invaded.
Right.
So... it's this paragraph, yeah, here. I have yet to see I want to do the IAEA. So they've been found in violation of their non-proliferant obligations by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Well, guess who is also in non-compliance with them? The Israel. People who didn't sign them, which is Israel. And they are the actual ones who proliferated nuclear weapons in the Middle East.
Hmm.
By stealing our weapons technology and developing probably 200 nuclear warheads. And perhaps... I wasn't able to confirm this, but there are some things that suggest that they have a intercontinental ballistic missile system.
And they acquired our nuclear technology during the JFK era, is that right? Or thereafter?
It goes back to the 60s, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the IAEA, what he's referring to there is right, and this is another like war propaganda alarm thing for me. Right before Israel attacked, the day before, the IAEA came out with a censor motion in the UN against Israel or against Iran. For non-compliance to their current obligations that they signed in the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. I looked into it. And I covered this a little bit the last time on the podcast, but I think it's important worth going over because J.D. Vance doesn't watch the podcast. And he should. So the material evidence of that report, I read the report, it basically claims the only material evidence claimed is that there is some fissile that they suspect was in Iran in 2003 that hasn't been accounted for. Iran denies that fissile ever existed and has since 2003.
That's nuclear, like weapons grade material.
Yeah. 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 It's like it's in the process. It's not 90%. They couldn't even do 90% back then, but it was beyond civilian purposes.
Sure. Sure.
So they could have done this sensor anytime between 2003 and today,
but they did it.
It would be exactly the same, but they did it the day before the attack. The other one that was more relevant is they basically are out of compliance with some of the reporting. But it wasn't a snapback motion. So a snapback motion would have actually imposed the JCPOA sanctions, we're out of the JCPOA, but other countries are still trying to follow it. None of those countries, they didn't make that motion. It wasn't even found to be out of obligation to such a degree that it would have triggered a snapback motion if we even were in the JCPOA.
Hmm.
Not to mention, most of the reporting problems wouldn't be a problem because you would have the enhanced reporting regime. And they don't have that now because Iran pulled out after we did. Because why would you stay in it?
Right. Yeah.
And that's, and it goes back to Trump pulling out of it, and you're just left with why? Why did you do it? And he has given no reason.
Well, given that that was in his first term, do you think that that was some recommendation made by someone who he didn't know not to trust?
No.
And he followed their guidance and did it?
No, I don't think it was that.
What do you think was the motivation?
I think he did because it was, I don't know why he did it, but he said it in his opening remarks the day he said he was going to run for president. He goes down the escalator, and one of his beefs against Obama was the nuclear deal.
Hmm.
And I hate trying to psychologize the guy.
It's a rather impossible task.
Right. But you could come up with a lot of reasons, right? It could be, well, it was in the news cycle, so he made it an issue, and then he kept his campaign promise. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah.
And imagine just how reckless that is, if it is that.
Sure. I mean, speaking of keeping campaign promises, he promised to end wars, not start them.
Yeah, exactly. So I've yet to see a single good argument for why Iran needed to enrich uranium well above the threshold for civilian use. That is the latent nuclear capability and has been accelerated since the leaving of JCPOA and the Israeli war in Gaza. So that's why, JD. I've yet to see a single good argument for why Iran was justified in violating its non-proliferation agreements. Well, it kind of didn't. I mean, it kind of did, but it kind of didn't. And it wasn't that big of a violation. It's a slap on the wrist violation, as far as I can tell. A censorship movement is not like this disastrous thing. They're not kicked out. They're not found in like complete violation. It was a censor. So what do we talk? Like, you're overinflating what they did in order to do what exactly?
To justify the attacks?
Yeah. Well, I mean, kind of. Like, he's doing apologetics for the Trump administration,
sure, of course.
So I wish he had, there was some there, but I just didn't see it. It's 2003.
Yeah.
The real beef, so if you read this, you might get the impression that the IAEA went there and said, what's all these nuclear facilities doing here? And what's all this nuclear material that's 90% weapons grade?
Yeah.
So,
but it was a violation, a minor violation from 2 decades ago.
Yes. A better argument for him would have been right after this, they then announced that, well, we're going to do more of it now. And they said, we're going to start 2 new facilities and we're going to do more 60% weapons grade. Or not weapons grade, but 60% grade. So it's neither useful for weapons nor is it useful for civilians. But it is a latent capability.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Iran doing themselves any favors. I'll meet that 100%. They're a cartel and a terrible regime. But there it is.
Yeah.
So, and the last, I've yet to see a single good pushback against the IAEA's finding. Well, that's that. So, yeah. I wanted that to be it, right? and especially with the whole non-proliferation thing, the whole thing is so ironic because you're just sitting there with a country that denies officially having nuclear weapons when everyone knows they do, telling another country that they can't, when right next to that country is Pakistan, who does and is also part of these treaties. So,
right.
Well, Israel's not. Pakistan is exactly the most reliable country on the planet too, guys. Like, they were just at war with India.
Yeah. Yeah. No joke. Huh.
And MAD applies to them. And this is like, this is this constant thing too. And I used to buy this propaganda, this whole argument that the reason you can't have Iran with nuclear weapons because, well, they're Islamists. And Islamists all want to die as a martyr. But that's operates on the assumption of the kind of neocon talking point of the Bush administration. That isn't actually why martyrs happen. That is why suicide terrorism happens. The best thing to look at to understand suicide terrorism is Robert Pape's Dying to Win. It's a systematic study using every suicide note of every terrorist attack from like the 1950s till like, last time I looked at it was like 2012. And it's thousands, tens of thousands of data points from all kinds of ideologies all around the world. noting, one of my more interesting facts is at one point, the IRA in Ireland and the Tamil Tigers of India were the biggest, you know, sponsors of the biggest terrorist actors in the world. And the really the Tamil Tigers are the biggest suicide terrorists. And they were a Marxist group trying to fight the Indian government. The theme is the same in all of these cases. It is never, religion is always the dressing around suicide terrorism. But the core of it is, I am fighting an overwhelming force of superior technical ability, superior wealth, superior ability in my own country. It's never, it's almost never, and this there's like a 1% rate, like very, very low, of I'm going to another country to do it.
Because I don't like their culture, their worldview, whatever.
Yes, it is almost always as you're in my country, and that is my rule. Now, I might go to your country to attack you. That's what 9/11 suicide terrorists were about.
But the thing that instigated that impetus is that we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and part of it being Gaza, right? And part of it being the treatment of the Palestinians, and part of it being our treatment of Iraq in the 1990s.
And I'm sure Afghanistan and the other more modern era GWAT conflicts were components of that as well.
100%.
Are currently.
That's why they existed then too. I mean, and it's been interesting as we've seen suicide terrorism specifically drop off, but that's because, you know, the proliferation of technology has enabled less suicide terrorism. Mm-hmm. Right? So like this whole argument that the Ayatollah, if they get a nuclear weapon, they'll just use it day one. They'll just bomb Iran and then destroy the world because that's just who they are. It just doesn't match now, right? That only works if you don't see past the propaganda, right? And that was a propaganda moment. That wasn't said because they knew that. That was said in order to manufacture your consent to always hate Iran forever, not to treat them as a cartel that happens to run a group of people that's also a terrible cartel, but there's a whole group of people there who are just trying to live their life.
Right. Yeah, you have to assume that they're completely irrational and want to die as soon as possible in order to assume that they would use a nuke day one.
That's right. Yeah. So I want to note this too. When it comes to the regime change thing, is if you'll remember some time ago, I mentioned that there was a debate at the Soho Forum where the pro-war guy pretty much came out and he dropped his cards and he said, well, actually, we know who's going to take over Iran after that. It's the son of the Shah. Well, he came out today with a nice little message.
Now, who is this?
Farsi.
The son of the Shah?
Yeah, the son of the Shah of Iran. So remember, we overthrew their democratically elected government to install the Shah. They then overthrew the Shah to put in the existing government that's in there today. And this is him talking about how, well, don't worry, guys. If the regime is weak and as the regime falls, you can take over and you can put a democratic government in place. And we have a plan.
Who's we?
Yes. Right. Oh. So the response to the hostage taking, right? At the Olympic Games that the Iranian students did of these hostages. That was in response beyond our overthrowing of the Shah and latent, you know, resentment for that. Also the fact that we took in the Shah in America.
How so?
The Carter administration did. We said, it's okay for you to come here.
Oh, when
he fled
deposed.
The country.
Yeah.
Then that doesn't say those kids deserved it. That doesn't mean that America deserved it. It doesn't mean those guys. But that's a motive, right? We are sponsoring a guy who exists to overthrow their government. Imagine for a minute. How would we feel in America if there was some guy who's like, well, I'm the governor of New Jersey. My great, great, great grandfather was the governor of New Jersey. I live in Britain. And don't worry, New Jersey. If you ever have any problems, I'll just come right in and take over for you. Yeah. We'd be like, fuck you, dude. No kings.
No kings. You
know? I mean, that would be, but we're doing that with Iran. Like, and this is, it was Lindsey Graham and a whole bunch of these guys are all like doing the pre-programming on this, like indicating like regime change is possible. I mean, look at Japan and Germany. We did it there. I mean, we could do it again. It doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be Iraq this time. In fact, we know who the guy might even be.
We got a stud on the bench waiting to go in.
Yeah, that guy.
All right, do we want to read any of what he's saying here, or was that just sort of...
Nah, I summarized it. Fair enough.
That.
All right, and we don't have time for Patrick McDavid today.
Okay, I think we should, since we're getting close on time, can we get through your thesis on...
Yes.
Well, quick, I'll let you tee it up.
Yeah, one quick 1 minute video. So this, I saw this and I was very interested in it because I initially saw it and I was like, huh. And I thought at first that this was one of the reactors that they had announced after the IAEA thing. But no, this is a new secret reactor that was exposed by new information brought to Fox News. Watch how they report this.
Exclusive satellite images revealing the location of a previously unknown Iranian nuclear site. Now, the facility spans nearly 2,500 acres, and this is a big discovery. Jillian Turner has more from the State Department. Good morning, Jillian.
Pretty explosive, Dana. These satellite images that we have obtained exclusively show the alleged site location and even the layout of the secret, previously unknown nuclear weapons facilities inside Iran. This, of course, raises fresh concerns about the regime's role in these ongoing nuclear talks with the Trump administration. The National Council of Resistance of Iran has collected intelligence from sources on the ground inside Iran that locate this nuclear weapons facility in what is called Semnan Province, far from the regime's already known nuclear sites. It's codenamed the Rainbow Site by Iran's officials, and it spans nearly 2,500 acres. It's been operating as far as we can discern.
Okay, so can you back up to that map? I just want to make sure I'm clear on where it is. It looks like in the final map that they show, they say it's in Semnan.
Yeah.
So it's this one here, slightly to the right of center.
Semnan site, I guess.
They didn't really like label it out there.
They did not make that clear. Now, you might get the impression that this was some like investigative reporting from some organization, right?
Well, they did name a very official sounding organization.
Yeah, NCRI. Here's the report right here, right? And this map is a little bit clearer, but this is pointing out this province right here.
Oh, okay.
So what isn't clear in the Fox News report is it has nothing to do with nuclear technology whatsoever.
The site?
Yeah, it's actually tritium, right? Which is not uranium. It's a resource used in nuclear weapons, so that's important, but it's not like a new nuclear refinement facility.
Is tritium used for other things?
No. It has no industrial use that I'm aware of.
And just nuclear weapons.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So, and it says it right here in the report. They just don't even make that clear. So, obviously, you're already a step behind. Now, at least one of the things, they just say the name. NCRI, the National Council for Resistance of Iran. Foreign Affairs Committee. Who is NCRI? Well, it might shock Fox News listeners that they did not inform you that the Secretary of State and the U.S. courts have repeatedly found NCRI is a front group for the Mojahideen-e-Khalik, which M-E-K, which means the People's Mojahideen Organization of Iran. Mojahideen.
Yeah, that's an old term. I feel like I've heard that thrown around before. What's the history there?
Yeah, the Mojahideen was a certain group of Afghanistan rebels that were invested in by the CIA in the Afghan war against the USSR in the 1980s with a certain guy at the head of it called Osama bin Laden.
Ah.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with this story, but other than the fact that they like that word Mojahideen. But that should throw off some radical Islam-like flags. And it should, because it does. So, this is as recently as up to like 2004, 2005, 8, 9, 10, 12, 12. There's all these court cases of these guys appealing to no longer be on the terrorist watch list.
The NCRI specifically.
Yeah, because they are a front group for MEK. And these courts are like, we know you are. So why are you doing this again? So they do it again and again and again. There's a bunch of financial reporting of all this lobbying that they do in D.C. at the same time. And then in 2012, Hillary Clinton delists them after a pressure campaign from Rudy Giuliani, Howard Dean, Tom Ridge, Wesley Clark, and the mustache man himself, John Bolton.
John motherfucking Bolton. Oh, that bastard.
Yeah, so they publicly advocated for delisting, claiming that MEK was a key ally against the Iranian regime. They attended their events. They took their money. Like, there's serious, you know, like, they were on that side. So what happened, as I understand, and I found a Rand Corporation study that revealed this, is that, okay, so the MEK is a revolutionary Shia Marxist group. So they're like blending Marxism with Islam, right?
Wild.
Yeah. And so they're a leftist group. And dating their origins back to the 1960s as like a terrorist bloc within the Shah's regime. And then when the revolution happens, they join in the revolution. But like all revolutions, it's a coalition. And the revolutionaries, like, they are the Marxist vanguard. Well, in this case, the counter-revolutionaries, the conservatives, the religious conservatives, they kick them out of the country. Right? They start killing them, right? And so then they leave the country. They go to Iraq. They get employed by Saddam Hussein for a while to do terrorist activities in Iran during the Iran-Iraq War. And then by the 1990s, a whole different dynamic develops. They're considered a terrorist organization by Iran as well, by Iraq as well. And then in this Iran study, Rand Corporation study, they mention how, according to them, and according to some studies and books and things like that that they quote, they became a front group, or not a front group, but at least collaborating with Israeli intelligence against Iran.
The NCRI was collaborating with Israel against Iran.
MEK.
MEK.
NCRI is a late 90s rebranding, like, front group so that they can do other stuff, right? And how do they fund that? Great question. According to NBC News, The New Yorker, and The Intercept, Israeli intelligence, probably Mossad, shared intelligence with MEK about Iran's nuclear program. Additionally, collaborating on releases with them, and that's according to the Rand study, to leak this to the press with, like, so it's not coming from the Israeli government, right? It's coming from somebody who's Iranian, right? So it gives that appearance of, like, an organic group that's existing to resist the terrible regime, right?
Oh, wow.
Possibly trained or the Israeli intelligence possibly trained or coordinated with MEK operatives in some operations. And that includes the assassination of nuclear scientists. And then MEK has been described as a cutout, an actor that performs with plausible deniability in supporting the state, in this case, Israel, including in funding. So they might be even funded by Israeli intelligence, according to those sources.
Well, and if they're funded by Israeli intelligence, they're funded by the United States, because Israel is the largest source, or the largest benefactor of U.S. foreign aid.
Yes.
In the world.
Yeah. And specifically in defense, too. Yeah. So, and how much that's using their intelligence, I don't know. But, so should Fox News listeners know that the resource that they're using is an Israeli intelligence front?
Well,
or at least asset, or co-opt asset?
I can't say that that would turn off most Fox News listeners. They're probably like, oh, good, that's a reliable source.
Well, if they knew it was an FBI resource, would they trust it?
Well,
if it was a CIA resource, would they trust it?
I don't know, with Kash Patel at the helm.
It's insane that we would trust a foreign intelligence agency more than our own. And I understand that we don't trust our own. The fact that the MAGA right doesn't is one of the best things that have happened in American politics in generations.
Oh,
so,
for
like,
sure.
Like, I just can't even, So, like, that being omitted, and then when it's timed now, is too much for me.
For sure.
It's too much.
For sure.
I mean, and then on top of that, and, like, look at this. This proves, obviously, doesn't this prove that there's a tritium site right there? So, like, the case is that these... So they have a bunch of specifics about it, but any of these specifics, so what it is the actual location of it is what they claim is a cover for a subterranean tritium factory that exists below it. And on top of it is a chemical factory, right, for making various different kind of chemicals that are used in commerce, right?
Sure.
Petroleum products, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, and we're talking everything from, you know, plastic stuff to fire retardant. So this is your proof. See? That's the factory.
There it is.
That proves it, right?
Go back up. Yep, looks like a weapons factory to me.
And then it's just a bunch of fucking words from this Israeli outfit. Look, circles on a map. Polygon. See, doesn't that prove it? I don't understand. Like, this is supposed to be...
Case closed.
Knockout, like, proof of any kind?
What are we even...
We're looking at the same picture taken in different environments.
That could be a factory farm in Kansas for all I fucking know.
Right. I mean, like, they're not. And that's the thing is, like, there's also no, like, person who's, like, saying this is the thing that they saw with a reputation.
Right. There's no credibility backing this claim. It's just this nameless, faceless organization that you have pretty clearly, in my opinion, tied to Israeli intelligence.
Yeah. So, like, this can't be a casus belli. I mean, they had a secret tritium factory.
At the very least, it's a data point that, yes, maybe they were accumulating the tools necessary, you know, in this latent nuclear capability thesis to be able to make a weapon at some point. Yeah. But it's not like a smoking gun that, like, there's a nuke under there.
Yeah. Or even if it was a tritium factory, then you can incorporate that into your deal, right? You can say no tritium, you know, shit, you might bomb it, right? You might say like that's the thing that we're gonna do, right? But then at least you have like evidence presented to the public, so you can do a declaration of war. So then you could go do a thing, not this thing we're doing right now. And that's the last part of it, man. How is Trump gonna do it? Like, there's all this reporting that happened today that. I mean, and there's an enormous amount of military assets. I mean, being redirected towards Europe and the Middle East. Let me see here. What was it? Massive deployment of U.S. aircraft. And I got a little graphic here that shows it.
So all of these aircraft are headed over the pond to the Middle East.
Yes.
In Europe.
Yeah.
Wow. Good to see the Canadians getting involved.
Additionally, just announced two aircraft carrier battle groups, which is 24 ships.
Oof.
There's already ships all over the Mediterranean and the Arabian Peninsula.
This is happening.
Yeah.
This is happening.
Right. So all of this stuff is lining up. I see all these dominoes. I see all the justifications, the propaganda. I see all that. And then I see these like little justifications that are so weak. They're and like so terrible weak. And like not at all pulled together so that, I mean, it's weaker. At least with the weapons of mass destruction, there was like aluminum tubes, like a factual claim that could be disproven. You know what I mean? Like this is like vague pictures of aerial areas with an intelligence outfit saying, trust me, bro. You know, like
this seems to be all that's required or all that they think is required now. I mean, it calls back to the Cash Patel Dan Bongino interview about like Epstein killed himself. Trust me, bro. Like it seems like this is a pattern now that like, perhaps there's this attitude within the administration or the broader, you know, deep state surrounding the administration that because of Trump's sort of cult of personality and celebrity and influence that he has over his base, that if he says there's a thing or if they say there's a thing that exists, it just does. That's enough proof for the base to buy it and go forward with it.
Yeah.
Or support it.
Which is tragic.
It is tragic. I think it's absolutely devastating to Trump's credibility. For those of us that thought he had some,
yeah.
I'll say it as well. Like we were giving him the benefit of the doubt. You know, I voted for Trump, giving him the benefit of the doubt. This is making me regret that.
Yeah.
Deeply.
And we'll see. I mean, it's possible this is all, and I think, and I don't want to talk for Kyle, but I could see the point of view that people are articulating saying, this is just Trump just anteing up, getting them to break. Right. I just think at the end of the day, that is under leveraging this moment, right? This is under weighing what it means to Iran to give up their latent nuclear capability. It means become a vassal state or watch Tehran be destroyed. I mean, he literally put out a tweet last night saying, evacuate Tehran. He put out a tweet saying, what was it? We now have complete and total control over the skies of Iran. Iran has good sky trackers and the defense equipment and plenty of it, but it doesn't compare to American-made conceived and manufactured stuff. Nobody does it better than the good old USA. So this is him like, you know, it's actually Israel. It's just our stuff. But he's saying we, right? And what is that?
What does he mean by that?
Yeah, he means the coalition of America with Israel. And like that's what everyone always knew it was from the very beginning. It's all bullshit. It's just bullshitting us.
Yeah.
You know, and like I liked it when he was bullshitting the neocons, but now he's turning that on me and I'm kind of pissed off about it a little
absolutely.
Bit. You know?
Absolutely.
And that's understandable.
It feels like a mad rug pull. And I think there's a lot of reason to be disappointed. I know that there's a war powers resolution that has been introduced in the Senate. And it sounds like there will be one introduced in the House to try to curtail some of this or get Congress involved in this process versus just allowing the executive to do whatever they want to do. Do you think there's any viability to that?
Yeah. I mean, Thomas Massey's leading the charge in the House. You know, this is not our war, but if it were true, Congress must declare such matters according to our Constitution. And that should be the minimum expectation. Honestly, I don't think it matters in this sense. I don't see any legal justification for it. What do you use? A 2001 AOMF on Al-Qaeda? Iran's been fighting Al-Qaeda as long as we have.
Yeah.
Al-Qaeda does not like the Shias.
Yeah.
Do you use the 2002, the Declaration of War against Iraq, to invade Iran? Do you use the War Powers Act? There's no emergency, right? Even if you try to accomplish this in 90 days, there's no threat to us. And that's what the War Powers Act demands, like an emergency on the United States.
Yeah, but Israel is the United States, David.
And, you know, you could say they're threatening our bases. And this is the thing, too. Like, okay, how does this work? We bomb them, and then they start bombing our bases around the Middle East or go after our aircraft carriers in the Strait of Hormuz or something like that, or there's a fight in the Strait of Hormuz. Is that now invoking the war powers? It's a stupid, unconstitutional thing that shouldn't exist in the first place.
Right. Well, and if we're sending battle groups in, we're putting assets in harm's way to be struck, to be the justification for more conflict.
And then it's the Gulf of Tonkin all over again.
Right.
Right? So it's that, you know, and then even then, if a declaration of war against Iran came up from Congress right now, the biggest black bill, it'd probably pass. Think about it.
On that note, contact your senators and representatives and tell them to support the War Powers Resolution and tell them that you do not support this conflict and talk to your friends about it. Talk to your boomer parents and grandparents about it and explain to them why this is a bad deal. That's pretty much all we can do, yeah. It seems like.
You got to use our speech. We live in a free country-ish. And all we can do is leverage what we can leverage, which is our numbers, the amount of people who are actually on our side, 68%, and how we can make our voices heard. At the end of the day, populists should be sensitive to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, if what happens, Trump gets there and Iran capitulates, I'll be like, okay. You know, without firing a shot, okay.
It's still a ends justify the means calculation, right. And that's really sketchy.
Yeah, right. I don't want to justify any amount of these civilians dying or any of that kind of stuff. But if that's what happens, okay. But if it goes into a regime change war, I'm gonna use my speech as long as I have it to say why this is a bad idea.
Yep.
Because it's not in our interest. Our blood and treasure should not be used to defend a foreign country when they start a war with Iran. Because that's what happened.
On that note, friends, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Human Reaction. For David Rand, for Kyle Mack, for Bennett, I'm Joe Sheehan. See you in the next one. Peace. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
you want one more black pill?
Fuck it, why not? Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
U.S. military action against Iran before July. 65% chance according to the betting markets.
Damn.